You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
And joining us is award-winning journalist Michael Easter, who's become a leading voice on how humans can integrate modern science and evolutionary wisdom to achieve improved health, meaning, and performance in life and at work.
You can find his work in Men's Health, where he's a contributing editor, along with Outside, Men's Journal, Cosmopolitan, Esquire, Scientific American, Women's Health, and much more. Michael's latest book is called The Comfort Crisis: Embrace Discomfort to Reclaim Your Wild, Happy, Healthy Self. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You have spent a lot of time on this fascinating journey of yours to learn more about the mind and body benefits to living at the edges of our comfort zones and reconnecting with the wild. How and why did you first become interested in this?
Oh man. So I wrote The Comfort Crisis because I wanted to investigate kind of how modern day comforts and conveniences are linked to a lot of our most pressing problems. So things like obesity, chronic disease, depression, even feeling a lack of meaning, and how kind of by stepping outside of our comfort zone, we can really improve our mental, physical, and spiritual health. And to write the book, I traveled, 30,000 miles around the world, and I met with a lot of different experts, ranging from researchers at Harvard, special forces soldiers, geneticists in Iceland, Buddhist lamas, just kind of all around. But I think initially it was a variety of things, and one of the main things is that I, my background is that I was an editor at Men's Health magazine, and I noticed early in my career that anything that improves human health or happiness usually comes with some form of discomfort. So for example, if I want to improve my fitness level, I'm going to have to exercise. And exercise is not comfortable. If I want to lose weight, probably going to have to be hungry. That's mm-hmm. not comfortable either, mm-hmm. right? And then I do this story with this guy named Donnie Vincent. He's a backcountry bow hunter and filmmaker, and he travels into some of the world's most remote places, and he'll be off the grid for months at a time. Long story short is we become friends. He invites me up to the Arctic for more than a month, and I jump on. And, going in there, I thought I was relatively healthy and prepared. I'd because of my work, I'd been sent into some, sort of hardcore gyms and had to do some kind of crazy stuff outside. But this was just way outside my comfort zone. I mean, every single thing we did up there took effort. I was always uncomfortable. It was freezing the entire month. Even if we wanted to get water, had to hike down to this like stream and carry it back up to camp. We were carrying heavy backpacks the entire time. I was hungry because we only packed in so much food, but we were burning, like 4,000-6,000 calories a day. Even the silence and solitude of nature up there can be really sort of haunting at first. And this discomfort only amplified over time. And when I got back into my modern life, though, obviously made it out, right? We wouldn't be having this conversation.
Thank goodness.
Yes, yes. When I got back home, I just noticed that I felt healthier and happier than I ever had. I'd lost 10 pounds. I was fitter than I'd ever been, but more importantly, I think just the dial on my mental and even spiritual health had moved like 10 notches. I just was really hard to rattle, but also really appreciative of everything I had. And I think that's because I could see this definite difference between the life that I lived in the Arctic and what I lived at home. And the real difference is that, life at home was very comfortable, very easy. Everything's easy. Everything's effortless, never challenged. I can always be comfortable. And while that is great, I also wanted to know, why'd I feel so good after going through all that discomfort? And so that sort of set off the journey trying to see, you know, humans evolved in environments much like the one that I was in the Arctic. And that was what life was like for millions of years. And then it's only in the last about 100 years that we really started making our lives significantly more comfortable in the form of things like temperature control, the fact that we don't have to work for our food, that we don't necessarily have to move to live, right? Like you could walk 1,000 steps every day and you'd be totally fine now. But it turns out that as we've removed ourselves from that, from having to put in effort, from, you know, having times of discomfort, our health has paid for it. So the book is about my trip in the Arctic and a handful of discomforts that I identified through, you know, the rest of my travels that can really seem to move the dial for humans, health, happiness, spiritual health, all that good stuff.
In what ways did it change your mind about what people are capable of physically? And I know you've said even more so mentally.
Yes. Okay. So that's a great question. Think about how we evolved as a species. We would have to do challenging things all the time. To live was to put in effort. You look at the research and our ancestors did put in 14 times more physical activity every single day. And we would have to do things like big epic hunts. We would have to move from summering to wintering grounds. We would have to face, you know, tigers lurking in the bushes. But nowadays, we have removed a lot of challenges from our life. You know, like I said, it's like we don't have to do hard things. And I think that that's made us believe that we are incapable of doing hard things. And so by never really going out and testing ourselves, we're never really made aware of what we are capable of. So when we kind of get across the edge of our comfort zone, you know, we can look back and be like, oh, you know, here I thought this was my edge, my physical, the edge of my capabilities. And yet, you know, by doing whatever it is, for me, it was going into the Arctic for all this time. But for, you know, someone who, you know, doesn't exercise all that much, that could be deciding, I walk 1 mile every day. I don't think I can do more than 1 mile, but I'm just going to try. And once you get, you know, beyond that limit, you can look back and be like, well, you know, I really sold myself short here. Where else in my life am I selling myself short? Because you think about it, it's like a lot of people today, you know, you could say, you know, could do X in environments where we don't have to. If this were 100 years ago, we would all be working a lot physically harder. If it were 1 million years ago, we would literally be hunting and gathering to live. Like to try and say that you can't do something, it's just like, no, you just haven't tried. You're totally capable of doing all these amazing things, but you're never forced to, so you don't believe you can.
We want to thank you for being part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners, and we want to tell you about Policy Genius, something every family should look into. Policy Genius works to help insurance shoppers understand their options, compare quotes, and buy a policy all in one place.
If someone relies on your financial support, whether it's a child, aging parent, or even a business partner, you need life insurance.
Life insurance can give you peace of mind that if something happens to you, your loved ones would have a financial cushion for rent or mortgage payments, loans, education costs, and everyday expenses.
Having life insurance through your job may not be enough. Most people need up to 10 times more coverage to properly provide for their families.
Typically, life insurance gets more expensive as you age, so it's smart to get a policy sooner rather than later. My husband is a bit older than I am, and he bought a life insurance policy as soon as our first child was born to make sure we were covered in case he passed away. That policy is still in place, and it's given both of us peace of mind for decades.
Policy Genius is your one-stop shop to find and buy the insurance you need. Here's how it works. Click the link in the description or head to policygenius.com and answer a few questions.
In minutes, you can compare personalized quotes from top companies to find your lowest price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius.
The team of licensed experts at Policy Genius will help you understand your options and apply for the policy you choose. The Policy Genius team works for you, not the insurance companies. You can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered.
Policy Genius doesn't add on extra fees and doesn't sell your information to third parties.
Policy Genius has thousands of five-star reviews across Google and Trustpilot, and they've helped more than 30 million people shop for insurance since 2014.
Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you can save.
Again, that's policygenius.com.
You talk in the book about the importance of rediscovering boredom. Elaborate on that.
Yes. So we were up there, when I was up there, we were hunting. And while that might seem like it's some action-packed act, it's totally not. A lot of times we're sitting on a hill waiting for this herd of caribou to move through, but they didn't want to show. So we're just sitting for like weeks at a time waiting. My cell phone didn't work up there. I wouldn't have had service within 100-mile radius.
Wow.
I didn't bring a book. I didn't bring a magazine. So what do? To kill time, I look at nature. I can only do that for so long before that becomes boring. Then what do? I read the tag on my jacket. You know, I learn fascinating facts like it's dry clean only and it's 60% down.
Tough to find a dry cleaners up there.
Yeah, tough to, for sure. I read the labels on my energy bars. Then I come up with story ideas for magazines that I write for. Then I write some of my books. So I kind of told you all that to basically say, as humans evolved, boredom was a good thing. Boredom is this evolutionary discomfort that tells us, hey, whatever you're doing right now, it doesn't have a big return on your time invested. So you should go do something else. So for example, as we evolved, let's say we're on a hunt, right? If the hunt wasn't successful and it didn't seem like it was going to be, boredom would kick in and that would tell us go do something else. So maybe we go pick some potatoes, dig up some potatoes or something. So boredom used to be this thing that pushed us to do something productive. But now what do? When we get bored, we have very easy, effortless escapes from boredom all the time. You look right at the average person and we now spend more than 11 hours a day engaging with digital media. So now every time someone even feels the lightest tinge of boredom, they don't go, what's something I can do that might be productive? We pull out our cell phones and we look at Twitter or Instagram, right, or yeah, we go shopping on Etsy for more stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Now those advancements are amazing, don't get me wrong, but by never putting ourselves in a position where we face boredom and don't immediately quell it with our cell phone, we don't have these moments for introspection. We don't have moments where we are forced to come up with creative ideas. So there's even research around this where they take groups of people, they let one sit in a room and use their cell phone, not be bored. And then another group, they will bore the crap out of them. They will make them watch a video of people folding laundry for 15 minutes. People get really bored watching this, right? And then they'll test their creativity. And the people who have been bored consistently come up with better, more creative answers to on these creative problem solving tasks. And boredom, even because we often go inward, it gives our time, our brain some time to relax and sort of reboot. You know, anytime that you're paying attention or focusing on anything in the outside world, may not seem like it, but your brain is actually working really hard. And so by having times where we mind wander, it's actually kind of this like reset period for our brain. So there's this like myriad of things that are not necessarily good that have happened once we removed boredom from our lives with all our tech. And in the book, I really talk about, you know, today we see so much messaging around you need to use your cell phone less. And, you know, we get it. That is true. We're all working on it. But one thing that happens is when a lot of people go, okay, I'm going to use my phone an hour less a day. What do they do with their newfound hour? They like watch Netflix and your brain doesn't know the difference between the two. So really I advocate, don't think less phone, think more boredom. Try and put yourself in a position where you're completely removed from all this tech that's in our lives. So for me, that's all 20 minutes every day, I'll go on a walk and I just won't bring my phone and I'm forced to let my mind go where it needs to go. And it's usually someplace that's a lot more interesting than dog videos on Instagram, although I love dogs.
As our Nobody Told Me conversation continues, we want to tell you about our sponsor, Coda. You know, it's great to be able to work from anywhere, because I just need my laptop and decent Wi-Fi. But you know what's not so great? Being spread out across the country, across the world, actually, and trying to keep our team on the same page and focused on tasks. That's why we're huge fans of Coda.
With teams working all over, if your best work is spread out across documents and spreadsheets and a stack of workflow tools you have to jump in and out of all day, you need Coda. It's the doc that brings it all together. Coda is endlessly customizable and connected.
There are templates for anything and everything. Product roadmap, remote onboarding, OKR tracker, meeting notes, you name it, Coda has it. Coda adapts to growing teams and changing strategies, and it can help you change how you view information depending on what you need to do with it.
And perhaps most importantly, Coda seamlessly integrates with the tools you need. Everything in Coda is synced. Make an update in a table and it automatically shows up everywhere. No more relying on copy and paste to keep linchpin projects current.
Your team can operate on the same information and collaborate the way we all want to, quickly and efficiently. With Coda, you can solve just about anything.
And right now, you can get started having your team all working together on the same page for free. Head over to coda.io/nobodytoldme.
That's coda.io to get started for free. coda.io/nobodytoldme.
Again, that's coda.io/nobodytoldme.
Kids and teens today don't know what it's like to be bored with all of the technology available to them. And I'm wondering if parents want their kids to gain the kind of perspective that you got, how they can give them that without putting them in danger.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I'm a professor at UNLV in Las Vegas, and I teach a really big media class. It's like 150 students, and I'll always poll students the first day of class and be like, all right, pull out your cell phone. Let's see who has the most screen time. And there'll be multiple people who have more than 8 hours a day. I mean, it's just so much time on phones. And I think there is a real case for getting kids to disconnect. And I think the answer is send them outside without their phone. Now, today we think, oh, well, that's dangerous. What's going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Or you also right? think that those kids are going to want to take their phones to document where they're going on Instagram.
Yes, exactly. But it's like, what's going to happen? We have, so here's a good reason why you want them away from your phone. You want to go have them go outside and face some, you know, a few challenges, whether that be, you know, falling off the monkey bars or whatever it is. In 1990, parents stopped letting their kids go outside and just go out and play. And the reason for this was because there were some really high profile kidnapping cases. Now, the reality is that kids were less likely to be kidnapped than ever before, but it just so happened that there were some high profile cases that, you know, if you watch the news, it would make it seem like kidnapping was happening all the time. So parents stopped letting their kids go outside. Now, you look at the data on these generations and they have the highest rates of depression and anxiety. One of the reasons is because they didn't get these times to go outside and sort of on their own face like little challenges that you face when you're playing outside. And so nowadays, as they grow up, anytime they face a challenge, whether it's, you know, they're in a classroom and someone disagrees with them or life just isn't going perfectly, that becomes really upsetting. You know, this is when helicopter parenting really started. So when the helicopter leaves, when your parents go, all right, helicopter's leaving, go off to college. It's like, well, what do I do now? And that can become, you know, kind of upsetting. So I think the answer is, as odd as it seems, is like, let your kid go outside. Let him go play on the playground. Tell him to come back by sundown. They're going to be fine.
Michael, the pandemic forced a lot of us to get out of our comfort zones. And I'm wondering what you think the impact of that has been and will be going forward.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that the pandemic has really shown that there are two paths that people can take. So we saw that, you know, assuming that someone didn't get sick, a loved one didn't get sick, et cetera, people either tended to sort of lean further into comfort. So you saw things like drinking rates went up, drug use went up, TV screen watching time went up, porn watching went up, like all this stuff went up, right? At the same time, there was this other group. And this other group, it was a wake-up call. And some people spent a lot more time outside. So for example, the national parks were like overrun with people. You couldn't get your hands on camping gear because people wanted to get out. A lot of people actually lost weight because they went, oh, this thing seems to be worse for people who have certain health risk factors. And one way I can take care of that is improving my fitness. So you couldn't get your hands on indoor exercise equipment either. So I think that, you know, hopefully it was a wake-up call for everyone. You know, unfortunately, I think in life sometimes things that are challenging, that are, you know, bad, frankly bad, need to happen for us to have a greater wake-up call. And I think that this was one of them. And we'll kind of see what happens from here because, you know, I wish I could definitely predict the future, but, you know, work is moving more to at-home working, which there are some benefits to that. There are also some downsides. Some people might just become even more comfortable and, you know, maybe that with that second group, more people will join that group too. So we'll see. I'm hopeful though.
I know that you struggled with sobriety yourself. I'm wondering how the challenges that you faced in the wilderness on your journey compared to those that you faced when you were trying to get sober.
Yeah. So I was 28 when I got sober. And, you know, in the book, I talk about, I come from this long line of men that seem to just run on booze, you know, bedlam and BS. Like, my father once painted his horse green and wrote it into a bar that, with a woman who was not my mother, you know, things, crazy things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And most of their problems, came from drinking too much. And I started sort of riding that same proverbial horse in my life, if you will. And, you know, I think I drank because just made me more comfortable, made life easier, cured my boredom. You know, if you're ever unsure of yourself, well, liquid courage helps that, you know? But when you have genes like mine and tendencies like I have, like, you know, I always said, my favorite drink was always the next one. And when, when the next one is your favorite drink, that might become problematic over time.
Right.
And it definitely did. So for me, like I had, you know, I got to a point where I'm like, this is a problem. Now it took me trying all kinds of different stuff to quit, never took. And for whatever reason, one morning I just woke up and it's like, I had a mental shift. I could see that like, if I continued on this path of sort of complacency and like leaning into the comfort of drinking, cause it, you know, nothing would fix my problems better than the first drink. Yeah. Maybe the seventh one was what was creating all those problems, but you could fix that real quick with the first drink. Right. Mm-hmm. And, or I could take, I could see that, you know, that path was eventually going to end me early. You know, I talk about it in the book, whether I die at like 35, 55 or 75, I didn't know. I just knew that I would probably die early. Or I could take this sort of unknown path. And that was that, you know, I'd have to get sober and I knew it was going to be uncomfortable. I'd have to totally like relearn how to live life. And I decided to go that route and it was very uncomfortable. I have, like I said, it was just like, you have a lot of fears and like, you don't know what you're going to do. You don't know if you can make it. But by going through that discomfort, my life improved. I mean, across the board, every single way, health, relationships, mental health, finances, X, Y, and Z. I mean, just you name it. And so I think, that kind of gave me an initial taste too, of like why sometimes you have to go through discomfort to improve your life. Like I learned that. And it also made me, so I think when I got to the wild, I guess is what I'm trying to say, is that I could realize, you know what, this sucks right now, mm-hmm. but maybe beyond it, there's something there that is, that I need to learn, but I just have to go through this tough spot in order to learn it. And maybe I'll be better on the other side of that.
Our Nobody Told Me conversation continues as we tell you a bit more about our sponsor, Athletic Greens, which offers a lot of health benefits without a lot of hassle or expense. Just mix one scoop of Athletic Greens AG1 powder with a glass of water every morning and drink up.
I've been drinking Athletic Greens AG1 for more than a month now, and I absolutely love it. I literally woke up in the middle of the night last week looking forward to the mildly sweet and refreshing taste of Athletic Greens and the way it gets my day off to a great start. I'm absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens in every glass.
It's important to me that this special blend of ingredients supports my gut health, nervous system, immune system, energy, recovery, focus, and aging. My sister and brother-in-law have been using AG1 for a while now, and we're so glad they suggested we try it.
Athletic Greens was created when the founder of the company experienced a ton of gut health issues and ended up trying to recover on a complicated supplement routine which cost him $100 a day.
He developed Athletic Greens because he knew how expensive and difficult it is to create an optimal nutrition routine on your own. Athletic Greens cost less than $3 a day, which is obviously a lot less than you'd pay if you bought all these ingredients yourself.
For every purchase, Athletic Greens donates to organizations helping to get nutritious food to kids in need, including No Kid Hungry here in the United States.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially in the flu and cold season.
It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase.
And all you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NTM.
Again, that's athleticgreens.com/NTM to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
That's athleticgreens.com/NTM.
Another thing you talk about in the book in terms of getting out of your comfort zone is to think about your own death every day. Can you elaborate on that and why you think that's important?
Yeah, so I started thinking about this because while we were up in the Arctic, we were hunting. And, you know, I eat meat, but I didn't really want to hunt. And I could see the sort of logical disconnect between that. And I think I just didn't want to cross, you know, what I thought would probably be a pretty heavy emotional burden. But the guy that I went up there with, you know, he told me, I think that you will understand like why I come up here and what this is all about if you actually hunt. And I think that I didn't want to, partially because we're so removed from the life cycle in modern life. You know, this goes from our funeral system where, you know, when someone passes away, we make them look as lifelike as possible. And then, you know, we bury them and then we're told to take our mind off it, to our food system where we just, meat sort of magically appears at the grocery store and it's made to look nice and shiny and, you know, like it didn't come from something living. And by hunting, I reinserted myself into the life cycle and it was heavy. It was definitely emotional, but it also made me realize that, you know, for one thing to live on, often another thing has to die. And that got me thinking even about my own mortality. And I wondered, you know, what are the impacts of the fact that in the US, at least, we seem to try and ignore death because it's an uncomfortable thing to think about and to face, you know, the most uncomfortable thing. And so to learn more about what happens when you do the opposite, I traveled to Bhutan. Now, Bhutan is it's right near Nepal in India. And it is one of the least developed nations on Earth based on a lot of economic rankings. But it's also one of the happiest. They consistently rank among the 20 happiest countries in the world. There's a variety of reasons for this, but one of them, it seems, according to some economists that I spoke with, is that they're very cognizant of the fact that they are going to die one day. Their culture approaches death totally differently. So for example, a lot of their artwork and cultural traditions center around death. they're told to think about their death at least once a day. And there's even these little clay pyramids that are mixed with ashes of dead people, and they're placed all around the country. And I mean, They're everywhere. They're in like every window sill. So you're constantly reminded. And so I went there and I met with a handful of different people, but one person that I met with was a Kenpo in the Buddhist faith. So that's a super high ranking. And to meet with this guy, we had to go up this crazy twisty mountain road to this shack he has that is kind of in the shadow of a monastery. Very, very simple home that he lives in. And I met with him and I talked to him for a few hours. Now he's written a book about, I think it's called the Art of Manifesting a Peaceful Death, or I'm getting the exact name of the book wrong, but you get the idea. He's an expert on this. He's thought about this, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, he talked about in the West, we tend to think about living life as a checklist where we have this list of stuff we need to do, right? It's like, I'm going to go to college. Then when I graduate, I'm going to get a job. Then I'm going to buy a car. Then I'm going to get married. Then we're going to buy a house. Then we're going to have a kid. And we sort of chase this list of things that we think is going to make us happy. But by doing that, by sort of always looking forward to the next thing, it's like, okay, once I do that, then things will be good. We sort of miss out on the present. And he talks about when you start to recognize the fact that you're going to die, he talked about it as thinking like, let's say you're walking a trail and there's a cliff and the cliff is death. It's like, don't you want to know there's a cliff there? Because if you do, you can change how you walk that trail, what you look at, what you say to the people you're walking it with. That really changes your behavior because all of a sudden you start to ask some questions like, okay, if I know that one day this ride is going to end, am I riding it the way I really want to? Like it helps you center upon that, which is going to make you most happy. You know, you find that, for example, people on their deathbed, they don't go, you know what? I'm glad I bought that Rolex when I was 35, right? Like, you don't care. You care about the time that you spent with others and whether you were a nice person to others. And so it tends to change people's behavior in a positive way that tends to make them happier. And this has actually been backed up by research in the West. So there's some studies at the University of Kentucky, some at Stanford, that have basically found that people who think about their death, take it into their life, even though it's uncomfortable, it improves their life, makes them happier because they start to make better decisions about how they want to live life instead of just sort of falling into this narrative that, oh, buy that, get this title, buy mm-hmm. that, do this mm-hmm. random thing in life that societally we've decided we should all do, you know?
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the end of each show, we ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? So what did nobody tell you about the benefits of going out of your comfort zone that you wish you'd known when you wanted to be a writer at Esquire and you didn't see your life turning out this way, that you wish you'd known because it would have made you make different choices and get out of your comfort zone quicker?
That's a great question. I'll answer it with what first came to mind. So when I was getting sober, I was talking to this guy who was also sober and I can't even remember what we were talking about. I just remember at one point he just goes, you know, I'm just not that damn important. And for whatever reason, that hit me in a way that was like, oh, it's not all about me, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that sometimes, at least for myself, I can get an outsized view of how much the average person cares about me. And we can get in our head about, you know, when you think back to that checklist I talked about, why do we do all that stuff? Because we care about what other people think. Why would you ever buy a Rolex? Because you care about what other people think, right? So by realizing like, hey, I'm not that damn important. Other people don't really care what I'm doing as much as I think they do. It frees you of some social anxieties that I think can sometimes hold people back. So for example, you know, understanding that helped me to, you know, I never talk about the fact that I was sober, but I put it in my book and I'm talking about it right now in this podcast. And by doing that, hopefully someone else hears and that can improve their life. Whereas before I would have been like, oh, you got to hide that because what will people think? But now that I've done it, I get a ton of outreach from people who are like, hey, I'm also sober. Thank you for talking about that. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, you're sober. I wish I was sober. What did you do? And I can talk to them about that. So by being more open and realizing that, you know, maybe people will judge you, who cares? Mm-hmm. I think that frees people to have more honest discussions.
Michael, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet?
So on social, I'm on Instagram. That's the one I kind of use. I'm Michael_Easter. And then I have a website. It is eastermichael.com. And then my book is called The Comfort Crisis.
Well, Michael, we really admire your wisdom and your work. And it's just been a fascinating conversation. We would love to have you back on again.
Yeah, I'd love to. That was super fun. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Our thanks to Michael Easter. Again, his latest book is called The Comfort Crisis: Embrace Discomfort to Reclaim Your Wild, Happy, Healthy Self. And again, his website is eastermichael.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.